Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee, and I'm glad you came by today. Well, it's hump day, and it means we've made it halfway through another week. And at my house, that's had lots of ups and downs. But be that as it may, we're making it through everything. After yesterday's show and Monday's show, we are realizing more and more all the ramifications of our mental health. And I want to be very clear about something. I think I've said it before, but I'm going to say it again, and that is the fact that mental health does not necessarily mean you have mental problems. Mental health for me is the ability to decipher through the things that happen to you on a daily basis and put them in the right categories. Not to overreact, not to underreact, but to be aware and keep yourself on a good balance. And when we talked this week and last week and the week we did the show about mental illness and mental health and the fact that Shelley and I went to the seminar last Friday and learned about some of the issues and problems facing the people in our here in Palm Beach County, at any rate, with the challenges they have in the treatment of people who are struggling with their mental welfare. So one of the things, of course, that we come back to is how early there's treatment, what the treatment is, and then, of course, the unbelievable ramifications of the treatment. We've talked a lot about cancer and killing cancer with very, very deadly treatments such as chemotherapy and radiation. And we've talked about getting past the cancer and often not getting past the treatment. Well, it appears as though that's the same in the arena of mental health. So we went back, we've talked, Shelley and I both, and I know that Monica has helped people on her website who call about their kids with ADHD or inability to concentrate in class and not being able to, you know, pick up on the ABCs and the reading, writing, and arithmetic that they're taught in early years, and consequently they're put on something to help them maintain their focus. So we're going to talk about some of those things that the three of us learned and maybe generate enough interest so that people really, really, really read the disclaimers and enlighten themselves as to what they're giving their children on the say-so of the man in the white coat. So I'm going to bring in Shelley and Monica. Good morning, Shel. How are you doing?
I'm doing real good, Marini. Good morning, and good morning, Monica.
I haven't brought her in yet. I'm bringing her in right now.
Yeah, but I figured she could hear me.
Yeah. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning. How is everybody?
We're okay. It's the problem is, though, like everything, the deeper you dig in the problem, the more problem you find. And I did a little bit of research yesterday. Yesterday was kind of a weird day. I took Spike for his normal treatment, and he had become dehydrated. So we had to go to the hematology office and get an IV of fluids. And we got him home, and he's still very uncomfortable and not able to eat. and really not much of anything is helping. And he was taking some pain relievers, and they helped for about 3 days, and then all he did was feel out of control. So he stopped taking those. He sometimes amazes me how he can do something and then just not do it, but that's what he did. So now he can't swallow at all. So we're struggling with that and trying to get him to a better place. And the people at the radiation office, the radiologist, there's like three different doctors that come and see him, and there's some amazing nurses. And I want to say that it's so different when you walk into an office where everybody cares as compared to an office where everybody's just doing a job. And, of course, we've talked about that on the show before, training and professionalism and things like that. But this office is so nice and so friendly and makes us both feel like they're paying attention to what's going on. So in the world of illness and not knowing what steps to take, because obviously you need more help than, you know, baking soda bath or something like that, then it's nice to know that people really care. So they helped us a lot yesterday, really, really a lot, and we'll go there again this morning, and they'll check him again. So hopefully we've got him through that trauma. I looked up a lot of stuff about Adderall and Ritalin and all those kind of things, but it sounds like your kids are awake, Shell.
No, they're not my kids.
Monica. No, it's me.
Oh, that's your kids. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you both have the same kids at home, so I didn't recognize the bark.
You don't hear my dogs bark. You hear them howl, which is hilarious, but very distracting, obviously. My dogs really don't bark. If they see something out in the front yard, they both start howling. They throw their heads back, and it's hysterical. But that's how they let me know that there's something that got their interest.
Wow. Well, my dog last night lays in front of the bay window in our bedroom. And Spike and I are both sound asleep, and all of a sudden we hear him getting all excited. He almost went through the window.
Oh, wow.
We aren't sure what was right in the front yard by the bay window, but whatever it was, he didn't want it there. So he's growling and yelling at the window and yelling at us, like, wake up, you guys. We think it was a cat, but it could have been a raccoon. It could have been anything, you know. Out here in the acreage, you never know. So, but scared the hell out of both of us at 12:30 this morning. So who wants to address this first, or would you rather that I went to some of the information I found out about Adderall and Ritalin and some of the reasons why they address that so early on and what the worth of those things are? But one of the things that I don't think parents look at, because they're in distress and they just want help, they blindly hand it to their child, and the side effects are hellacious, horrific. I can't think of enough bad words to say about
that. I'd like to say one thing before we get into that, because it's kind of like generic. It'll kind of affect the entire conversation today, and then we can go into the specifics of particular drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what I found, I was just, because there's so many of them out there, so I was looking for something just on side effects on drugs for, you know, emotional conditions. And I found this Consumer Reports report, which I thought was pretty interesting. And I read through bits and pieces of it, but the two things I'm going to share with everybody, this was on antidepressants for depression and anxiety, which is a huge, which is one of the largest mental health arenas, is just depression and anxiety, and then you get into the more specific disorders. But when you go down to the chart on here, and it's talking about side effects and why people choose one drug over another and why people don't stay on them. So the two things I'm going to read you is, and this covers a whole, you know, it's like Wellbutrin and those types of drugs, okay? All the different ones that they have with the cute little cartoon commercials and the people running on the beach and stuff. But what they talk about here, when they go under treatment options, they say level one. So they're actually giving the emotional symptom, let's say, a level. Level one, and they're calling it normal sadness. This is just something everybody goes through, you know, from time to time, and it requires no treatment. So under treatment options, it says no treatment needed, just support from family and friends and talking it out. This is actually what it says on the Consumer Reports chart. On level two is, level two is, okay, so normal sadness, and then you have situational or reactive sadness. It means something bad just happened to you, and you're sad because of it. That requires no treatment, but may require advancing to talk to a psychotherapist instead of just family and friends. Then you have low-grade, this is still all under level one, then you have low-grade depression or dysthymia, which is where you have the presence of more intensity. It's starting to reduce your pleasure in life. It may be becoming now chronic, and it's hard to kind of pinpoint where it's coming from. They still say that drugs are not needed. They're saying antidepressants have been used, but for the most part, talking it out is going to help. Not until you get to level two do they even say antidepressants should even be entertained. And even at that point, a level two is considered major depression, where now this is a chronic condition, it's very intensive, it's starting to affect your day-to-day activities, and they're still not saying that you should consider antidepressants. They give four other things, such as talking it out, getting some psychotherapy, maybe going into other types of therapy, you know, seeing a physician, that kind of thing. They're saying antidepressants may be used, but because of their side effects, you may want to look into other avenues initially. They don't really suggest antidepressants until you get into like a level four, which is where you're chronic, severe, you can't function, you're suicidal, and that kind of thing. Then you go into the side effects table, and it shows that the reason why a lot of people stop taking antidepressants is because these side effects are so debilitating, such as sexual side effects, confusion, suicidal tendencies, feeling of dread and anxiety. So you're taking an antidepressant, and one of the side effects is a feeling of dread and anxiety.
Pretty depressing to me.
Right, so which is, mm-hmm. I mean, I just find that astonishing that can actually be mm-hmm. a side effect of depressed mood, difficulty concentrating, and insomnia. So here you're taking an antidepressant because you want to feel better, and these are some of the, some of the side effects that you see. More serious side effects are drowsiness or confusion, feelings of panic or dread. Now you're taking an antidepressant and you get panic or dread, increased thoughts of suicide, insomnia, loss of libido, nervousness and agitation, and weight gain.
Those are all the things I learned as well.
Some of the simpler side effects are diarrhea, dizziness, dry mouth, headache, nausea, sweating, and tremors. Now, when you read the simpler side effects, and then this will be the last point I'm making, when you read these side effects, that means you're messing with the constitution of the body. If you're getting diarrhea, dry mouth, headaches, nausea, things like this, sweating especially, that means the body is having a toxic reaction. And almost every prescription drug, when you're taking any kind of a medication, these are some of the most common side effects. All right, you don't see that in homeopathy. You don't see that in other types of treatments. But when you take prescription drugs, almost all of them cause some of these symptoms. And the minute you're getting any digestive systems, you're getting that nausea, you're getting that diarrhea, it means you're having a toxic reaction in the human body. And you really, really need to understand that. If it's the only way you can get help, there's ways you can counteract this, okay, with probiotics and things to help the digestive system not to react so badly to the medication. But you have to understand that when you see these side effects, you're messing with the normal workings of your body. So you may help one problem, but you may be creating another one. And so there's a bigger picture here when you take prescription meds. People need to understand. But in cases like this, you're not solving the problem anyway, because sometimes you're actually increasing the mental issue you're having.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it what everything I read,
and I read like 4 or 5 articles. They all end up saying the same thing, and that is the fact that early usage of medications that help in the control of ADHD are have horrible, long-lasting side effects, like you just said. In one report I read, it will even stunt the growth of a child.
Yeah, I've heard that. I heard that.
And I think that some of the other things are, I mean, maybe not as blatant as that, but certainly as dangerous as that, the ability to reproduce in some cases. So, again, it is a synthetic drug. So I don't, one of the things that I read, well, a lot of what I read said everything that you just said, but I found this, this was in the Sunday Review in the New York Times, and it said 3 million children in this country take drugs for problems in focusing. Toward the end of last year, many of their parents were deeply alarmed because there was a shortage of drugs like Ritalin and Adderall that they considered absolutely essential to their children's functioning. So this man, his name is Alan Schroff, I'm probably saying that wrong, and this article was written in 2012, but he did some testing on his own, and all of his results were not good. We're just not good. I mean, they're variable, and there's all different kinds of side effects, and one kid would do this, and another kid would do that. And he also talks about the fact that these kind of behavioral problems are not like having diabetes or not like having an illness where a part of your body functions are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. The brain is such a different arena that when you use any kind of synthetic drug to help a brain function, you almost compound the fracture, is pretty much what I found out in everything I've read. And of course, Adderall and Ritalin are the two biggest components in this arena. They're the two that get talked about the most, but there are many others too. And of course, they're all drugs have got the same, I'm probably not going to use the right word here, chemicals. Would that be the right word
substance.
To use?
Yeah, probably substances.
Say that again? Substances?
I would use the word substances.
Okay, so they all have different names, but a lot of them are using the same substances to make them, and these are pharmaceutical companies that Adderall and Ritalin are named for. Adderall and Ritalin in and of themselves are not drugs. Those are names that were given by a pharmaceutical company. So unless you really research and see what's in them when you give them to your children, what about the things that we've talked about adverse reactions to different medications, or the fact that, we've talked about this a million different ways. So my biggest advice today on the show, after reading everything I read, which a lot of I knew, but now I have more factual information, is the fact that you have to be informed, and you have to read, and you have to find out what a doctor wants to give to your child. Let's everybody remember that nobody cares about your child like you do. Nobody. And that even includes the man in the white coat who is there to give you some answers. So he doesn't know the reactions your child has. He hasn't done an allergy test. He hasn't done any of those things. He sees that there's a problem, that your kid can't keep focused, your kid is in trouble in school. And you know, 2 or 3 years ago, and Shell, I think we talked about this last year, teachers were throwing kids out of classrooms and telling their parents to get them on something or they couldn't come back to the classroom.
I know, that's horrific, I think.
I really
mm-hmm.
do. Because mm-hmm. we have such a pill, I'm sorry, but it's true, we have a pill-popping mentality in the United States. And it's not this prevalent when you travel to other countries. This is really a United States epidemic that we really have a pill popping mentality. People don't understand that if you can look to other more natural ways of healing the body, they can take a little bit more time, but when you heal then. You're not prolonging it and dragging it out and creating other problems with your body that you didn't have before the treatment. And ironically, a lot of these meds for depression and things like that take 4 to 6 weeks to become effective anyway. So you're not even really doing something that's quick to respond anyway. But people think that they're going to feel better quicker. And it's because we have this type of an attitude towards pharmaceutical drugs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I want to just share this one little thing, and then I want hopefully you two to talk about some of the less aggressive, little bit more natural attempts to, I don't know, level out yourself, your child, whoever we're talking about. But I think it's important to hear this. This same man conducted a very lengthy survey, and in 1975, he and his organization started following 200 children who were born into poverty and therefore made them more vulnerable to behavior problems. We enrolled their mothers during pregnancy and over the course of their lives. We studied their relationships with their caregivers, teachers, and peers. We followed their progress through school and their experiences in early adulthood. At regular intervals, we measured their health, behavior, performance on intelligence tests, and other characteristics. By late adolescence, 50% of our sample qualified for some psychiatric diagnosis. Almost half of them displayed behavior problems at school on at least one occasion, and 24% dropped out by the 12th grade. 14% met criteria for ADD in either first or sixth grade. Other large-scale epidemiological studies confirm such trends in the general population as disadvantaged children. So I'm not going to read all the rest of this because it just goes on to tell, you know, different ages. Example, a six-month-old baby is playing and the parent picks it up quickly from behind and plunges it in a bath. Or a three-year-old is becoming frustrated in solving a problem and a parent taunts or ridicules. Such practices excessively stimulate and also compromise the child's developing capacity for self-regulation. So, again, this kind of goes back to our Bullies to Buddies show yesterday, and so many of the problems that we create for ourselves are, of course, under our own direction. So instead of perhaps, you know, it's like you have an overweight child. My grandmother would allow me, if all I wanted to eat were maraschino cherries, I could have that for my dinner. That's how my grandmother treated me. I loved her, you know, to the ends of the world. I would come home sometimes after 2 days with her and be so sick to my stomach from eating junk food that it wouldn't be funny.
Right.
She would also teach my little sister, because she loves sweets, so she would teach my little sister to put her finger in the butter and then dip it in the sugar bowl.
you know, her heart was in the right place, but obviously
exactly.
She didn't understand nutritional impact on a child's well-being. But it was obviously it was out of love because she enjoyed it. She wanted to expose you to things that would make your life fun without looking at the bigger picture. And unfortunately, a lot of things like that are really just done out of not understanding. You know, it's out of ignorance, but I'm not saying ignorance in a bad way, you know, like being ignorant of social issues. It's just ignorance of the bigger picture. You know, to them it's a very innocent, very sweet act. But it had negative ramifications to it.
Right. But the point is that a lot of the things that happen to us as children are because you know, I used to laugh after I had Spikey. Somebody gave me a Dr. Brothers book. Are you both familiar with who Dr. Brothers was?
Yes, yeah. I am.
Yeah, and
yeah, I am.
I read bits and parts of it, and I was like, God, does she have kids? And already I knew that. I wondered whether she had ever even dealt with a child.
I know.
So, you know, it isn't, there is no book, I'm sorry, but there is no book to teach you about individual relationships. You have to learn your children yourself. And it's not as easy as you make it sound. There's also a lot of the things that I read last night was, I mean, we just talked about, you know, families in trauma because of low income and problems like that. But even affluent children are diagnosed with ADD and have all kinds of perks in their lives. But even in families like that, there's domestic violence, there's lack of social support from friends or relatives, chaotic living situations, lots of moves, mom and dad are moving up the corporate ladder, don't have time for the kids. As somebody sent me a video again this week of baby monitors in the homes of very, very wealthy people where the baby's caregiver is making more money than I made many times working a full week. Some of them make $1,000 a week to be the family's babysitter and live there for free and eat there and everything. And the abuse that's going on is unbelievable. So there's a lot of extenuating circumstances in the behavior of a child. So before you cover it with a pill,
right,
it seems
right.
like a little investigation is in order, right? A little
exactly.
investigation. So what do you guys think? Can we talk a little bit now about some of the, obviously, investigation would be at the top of the list. If we were counseling a family who's having trouble like this, you need to find out what's going on in all the circles of that child's life and find out, you know, what is manifesting this behavior. If there is a short circuit and if there is a bona fide diagnosis from somebody who has really taken the time to not just hear what you said, but really done some testing on your child, then that's one scenario. But how do you both feel about a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old who isn't paying attention in class? What's your input?
I would say the biggest, anything that you see negatively about a child, their attention in class, or they're acting up, or they can't sit still, or their focus, it all starts with their gut health. And just changing their diet and getting rid of all the junk food and providing more vegetables and fruits instead of Twinkies and Ho-Hos and chips, and the sugar, of course, will make a big change. And people just don't realize how easy it is for to change that thing. But, like you said, people are busy. They're working, you know, 50, 60 hours a week. And it's easier just to take the kid to the doctor. And the doctor does not look at their digestive issues. They don't ask, are they having constipation or diarrhea or heartburn or do they vomit spontaneously for no apparent reason? They don't ask those questions. They just mm-hmm. ask the question, oh, they don't pay attention in class. The school says I should give them a pill. Okay, here's your prescription. Now leave. And all this
exactly.
is done within 5 minutes. You know, they never ask about what the child is eating, what their diet is like, because doctors don't know that there's a correlation between what a child is eating and their mental health. And from eating bad things like that, a toxic diet basically, they're going to get ADHD or ADD or OCD. You know, it's going to happen. But the first thing that you will see in a small child is digestive upset.
Right.
And
right.
As the child goes to school and everything, that's when you'll start to see the ADHD coming in. You know, but
so ADHD is a symptom. It's not a condition, and that's attention deficit disorder is a symptom of something else. Doctors diagnose it like it's an illness that needs to be treated. It's not. It's
exactly.
A symptom of something, and you have to find that something that's causing the child to have an attention deficit. I mean, think of what the words are. ADHD is attention deficit. Okay, that's what the words stand for. Okay, there's a lot of things that can cause that. It's not a disease. It's not something that requires a pill. I completely agree with Monica that more times than not, it's going to turn out to be dietary. There are other things that can play into it, okay, but that's probably going to be the predominance. And I've seen it twice in my own family where it played out and drugs were not used, the diet was altered, and a child that was labeled as incorrigible by the school, and they were going to kick my nephew out of school, ended up becoming, I mean, it was like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde extreme in the change that he went through just by altering this young man's diet. And my sister was lucky enough that she had taken him to a pediatrician who was sensitive to diet and the effects on how a child behaves. And he really was avant-garde for it. This is going back over 20 years ago. He was really a very, very well-informed physician and understood nutrition and how it impacts a child. But today it's a lot easier. You know, you say, you know, give them more fruits and vegetables, and that's excellent advice. But unfortunately, kids are bombarded by snacks. Everybody that goes to schools have snacks, have cookies, have candy bars. They have all that kind of, they even, in some schools, they still have vending machines where they sell all kinds of garbage. And the good news is that today, with stores like Whole Foods, and there's a lot of other Whole Food type stores like Trader Joe's, these type of stores are all over South Florida now. It really, and all over the country for that matter. It's so easy now to go into a Whole Foods and go down the snack aisle and see good snacks that don't have sugar added to them, that are many times made from organic ingredients. You have sugar-free options that do not have aspartame in them. You have gluten-free options. So you have things that are clear of most of the allergens that cause attention deficit in kids. So there is a way of still giving your kid some sense of normalcy, giving him those little sweet snacks, something to take to school with him, without messing with his brain function. And it's never been easier than today because there are so many companies out there that are catering to lower no sugar, to gluten-free and things like that. So you can improve your kid's diet and still give them a sense of fun, still give them those little snacky items without messing with their ability to pay attention.
Well, and
right.
I think a lot of parents don't quite grasp that for some reason. You know, we've talked a lot before about the youngest child to the couple that owns the institute, and he's been with me sometimes 3 days at a time. And when we shop together, he knows what he can have and what he can't have. And he has no problem with it because that's how he was brought up. And he's incredibly healthy and sharp as a tack. And he enjoys his life. It's not like a bad thing. So there is the possibility of doing things like that, especially, you know, you form the habits when they're very young. Try to form good habits instead of bad habits. And I know that those habits come from a good place, like Shelley just said about my grandma. My grandma wouldn't have hurt me for anything in the world, and I know that. When I stop and think about what I would eat for a weekend, sometimes all we ate all day long were root beer floats.
Oh,
I mean, I think about it now and think to myself, no wonder you're fat. You know, and no wonder I get so much comfort from that kind of food, because that's, you know, those times were beautiful for me. I loved her so much and my grandfather. And it was like special time for me. And remember, I was the oldest of all those kids. So that weekend break for me, you know, so a lot of my habits today were formed during that time. And that's what we do with our kids, you know, understand that and understand that they can be good things with bad ramifications, maybe bad things even with some good ramifications. But everything you do to a very young child is going to have lifelong results at the end of it. So
the thing to keep in mind when you're talking about that type of stuff, Renee, is that food is different today. I hear people say all the time, oh, well, my grandparents or my grandmother used to feed me this and used to feed me that, and it wasn't bad for me. So what people don't understand is, like, something I grew up on was, like you, it was like what my grandmother used to do was take butter, melt it in a pot, pour it in a bowl, pour some Karo corn syrup. Remember the Karo white corn syrup?
Yeah.
Pour a little bit of
that
in the bowl, and then you'd take a fresh loaf of white bread, which has no nutritional value at all. You take a fresh loaf of white bread, and you take those slices, and you run it through the butter and the Karo syrup, and that would be like a feast for us. That would be like a, you know, major dessert. So unhealthy, but it didn't have any impact on me, because when I was a kid, all right, there was no GMO corn yet. Now you can't get products unless they say non-GMO on it. 90% of the corn products out there have been genetically modified to make cows get heavier faster, because it's made for the factory farming industry, and then the leftovers are given to human beings. Well, that genetically modified corn makes you get heavier, makes you feel hungrier all the time, because it was made to make cows get fatter, if you understand where it's coming from. So if you're not eating non-genetically modified corn syrup, you're really messing with your body in a way that it didn't happen to me. So if I tried to share that dessert with my nieces and nephews now, I would be harming them in a way that I wasn't harmed when it was given to me. So it's also a different world we live in when you talk about food.
Well, that's for sure. And I know Lindsay and Monica are very active in the GMO department, because they're not gigantic farmers, but they're farmers. They, you know, they have eggs and they have a garden and they have all those kind of things. So they are very aware of GMOs. I think it would be beneficial at some point in time if we had a show to explain, because I know I could walk around today and ask 30 people if they have any idea what GMO means, and I'm going to say to you, 25 of them are going to say no.
Exactly. I find that all the time. People just don't understand. They think the food of 150 years ago is the same food that we have now, but it most certainly isn't. And that is what is affecting everybody's GI tract and your gut, and in really bad ways. Because if you ask most people, how's your gut? How's your stomach? Do you have any problems? And at least 75% of those people are going to say, yeah, I have heartburn all the time. And, you know, and they're taking Prilosec, which makes the problem worse. And it's just crazy that people don't realize it all goes back to what you eat and what you feed your child. And as far as ADHD and ADD and any kind of a depression or anything like that, the biggest thing before we run out of time, I just want to say, if your child has any of those symptoms, the best thing that you can do for your child is, of course, try and change their diet, but get a probiotic, a very good probiotic, and give it at least once to twice a day to build up that good bacteria in your gut, in the gut, so it will do half of your battle for you and start working to build your immune system. And all your brain activity, anything that happens with your brain or your mind, all starts in the gut. People don't realize that, and so many doctors are starting to make the connection. Like, if you think about it, when you have anxiety, you're nauseous. You get nausea, diarrhea. You might vomit when you really have a lot of anxiety. Or if you have depression, first thing that happens, you just don't feel like eating. You want to sleep all the time. You know, mm-hmm. So it all goes back to the gut on any, mm-hmm. Most everything. And if you can clean that up by providing good probiotics and some good food, try to go with organics most of the time, you're going to see a difference. I mean, I have read so many articles about this subject on how to change, you know, how to change your gut microbiome so that you feel better and you have more energy and your liver works better. Your brain works better. You have more focus just by eating the right food and making sure you get some probiotics, whether it's through a pill or you start investigating cultured vegetables, because there's a lot of probiotics in that, kombucha, kefir, some organic yogurts have a lot of probiotics, as long as, you know, there's not any of the bad sugars or Splenda, that sort of thing. And it
plain yogurts that have no sugar added to them, and you can just chop in fruits or things like that, or add stevia
exactly.
for sweetener. And the plain yogurts are so low in sugar but high in all the live cultures you want to get. And you can get organic milk. You can get the coconut. You can get there's even almond milk yogurts now and things like that. But look for the ones that have no sugar added, and then just chop in some fresh fruit. That's what I've been doing lately, and it's phenomenal. It tastes very good, and it's so much healthier for you.
Exactly.
Let me ask you girls a question. So are you pointing to the fact that one of the biggest issues for a child who is having trouble focusing and sitting still, et cetera, it is the biggest problem is sugar? Is that what you're saying?
Well, sugar,
yeah.
Preservatives, anything that's in prepackaged junk food, basically. It's not just the
mm-hmm.
sugars, although sugars is huge. It can be gluten because wheat is so hybridized now that we can't digest it the way we used to, and wheat causes a lot of brain fog with general people, not just children. And obviously, children's brains are going to react more. But when you look to gluten-free option, sugar-free option, things like that, you're going to see a change in your child. You're going to see a little bit more attentiveness, and their brain will be able to work better. And then to just start adding things in their diet that can actually help brain function, things that have omegas in them. You know, omega-3s mainly help brain function. But, you know, making those type of choices. And it really doesn't take a lot for people. If you go to a Whole Foods store, they're really trained in knowing. If you're a parent of a child that's having some issues and you go into a Whole Foods store and you ask them, say, look, what would help my child's brain function? They're going to take you around the store. They're going to show you foods. They're going to show you some supplements that are good for children and things like that to help brain function, because they're trained in that. They're sensitive to it. They're going to be able to answer your questions. So it's not like it was 20 years ago when I first became vegetarian and I had nowhere to turn. You have people you can ask where you don't have to spend 2 years like I did teaching myself. You can walk into a Whole Foods store and in one afternoon get a complete re-education about diet and how it affects your kids.
So I'm going to put you both on the spot, and let's say to somebody, what are you going to give a kid for breakfast? What's your idea of a healthy breakfast that's going to hold them from, like, say, 6:30 in the morning until probably around 11 when they get to do lunch? And I'm talking about, elementary school kids. Obviously not a bowl of Captain Crunch because it's straight sugar.
No.
So what are you going to tell them to have?
Well, I would say, and this is the breakfast that my husband and I eat, would be to, everybody needs a juicer, okay? And we juice our vegetables and fruit, and that's what we have every morning, along with one of our eggs, because that gives you your protein source. So it's a vegetable and fruit juice and an egg. Possibly some yogurt every once in a while, a good yogurt, whole fat. Don't go for the half fat or the no fat. You need fat in your system. That also helps your brain focus. That's what we eat. And if I had small children, that's what they would eat too.
Well, my niece makes smoothies for her kids, and they love it. So smoothies is a great way to start. You can do vegan smoothies as well, taking the same ingredients that Monica just mentioned, but using like coconut milk yogurt instead of whole milk yogurt, things like that. There's other ways of getting the fats in there. I also agree with, I used to be vegan. I'm now vegetarian, and the only thing I put back were eggs because of the cholesterol issue. In fact, we should do a show on that. People are misled into thinking that cholesterol levels are dangerous at levels where they're actually needed to keep repairing the body. Without a certain amount of cholesterol in our system, the cells lose the ability to regenerate. And cholesterol, the largest element of the human brain is cholesterol. So when you start reducing that, that's why you see so many brain disorders today, because of all the cholesterol-lowering medication out there. Why I put eggs back in my diet. It also helps the skin to repair. Cholesterol is essential, providing it's not excessively high, that gives you a health issue. But the numbers right now the doctors look at are misinformed. And John Gray, in his latest book, actually wrote about that. He met the developer of Lipitor and talks about the fallacy in the cholesterol reading state. So I put eggs back in my diet. So eggs is definitely a good choice to have for breakfast. I agree with her on the smoothies. You can also make them Ezekiel toast, even if they have gluten issues, because Ezekiel bread is sprouted. A lot of people that have gluten issues can eat the Ezekiel bread, and they really don't have any issues with it. I eat a piece of Ezekiel bread, and it does have protein to it. Read the side panel of Ezekiel bread, and you'll see that there's protein in every slice. You look at a regular loaf of white bread, there's like no nutrients in it at all. But Ezekiel bread is high in fiber, high in protein. It's even got some calcium in it. It's very, very good. It's very tasty. You know, and sometimes I'll have a bowl of organic oatmeal, or I'll have, there's all kinds of, you can just have a big bowl of fruit. So there's a lot of different things that you can have that would taste good. Sometimes if it's a cold winter morning, you're going to want that hot oatmeal, and on a hot summer day, you're going to want that big smoothie to go off with. So you're going to cater to the weather. You're going to cater to the kids, give them some variety, but definitely smoothies, eggs, oatmeal, things like that. And it's very easy, to find.
Well, you
find
know,
help.
There was a big, I don't know what you'd call it, documentary the other day on the Today Show. School in, I want to say it was New York City, in one of the public school in a pretty much all-black neighborhood, a young woman introduced smoothies to her class, and Nutribullet donated the little blenders. And they showed all the kids with mounds of spinach and kale and arugula and all these green veggies and carrots and then some fruit as well. And they all made their own smoothies. And when they interviewed all these little kids, they all loved them. And
yep.
I think it was really good the way they showed it, because they showed her with just the mounds of veggies. And the kids, she did not coach any of the kids on what they chose to put in them. And so they were allowed to experiment. And when they'd add something, they could taste it if they wanted to and add something else if they thought it needed something else. There was nothing else on the table, though, but the fruits and vegetables. No additives of any kind, no milks, no refined sugars, nothing like that. And, I mean, they just loved it. I want to say their age was like 8 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was wonderful. And they really, really, really enjoyed it. And I thought, you're doing a couple different things with that program. First of all, you're teaching the child how to make good decisions. You're teaching the child how to do something for themselves, because let's face it, making juice, if you have five kids, would be a very time-consuming morning. Most women do not have time. If they are a working mom and have that many kids, that would be an impossibility, unless you brought the kids into it and said, okay, let's get the veggies and fruits ready for tomorrow morning before they go to bed at night, just like you put out your school clothes and anything else. That is, for me, that seems to like answer many problems in a family, and that is teaching the kids how to take responsibility, giving the child chores and things like that so that they can be a part in their own healthy lifestyle. So I loved it. It was great. I saw it like three times because they kept showing it again and again on the Today Show the other day. So that was a great idea. And, of course, I don't know how many times Nutribullet will donate all those blenders, but it's still a great idea. So.
That's a great
start.
Yeah,
I think
the
juice is a beautiful idea. Plus that, that's really so good because it doesn't make you work hard to digest. That's another thing for early in the morning. I thought to myself the other day, when you watch somebody sit down and eat a big breakfast, you know, like the Hungry Man special at Denny's, pancakes and eggs and sausage and bacon and all that kind of stuff. That's a lot of digesting to do. You know, a lot of digesting to do.
Right.
So the smoothie or the juice is like the best thing to do for your whole body. Let me ask you about something. If you were going to set up a diet for a family of six, a mother, a father, and four kids. And let's don't go to vegetarianism or veganism or any of those kind of things, the things that we know are more difficult to achieve. But what would be a healthy, rounded-out diet or food menu for a mom to have for a family of six that isn't going to be totally time-consuming? Because I'll tell you what, when you have four kids and you work 40, 50, 60 hours a week, the crock pot becomes your best friend. So,
well, I think the same thing when you're looking at a diet for multiple family members. First of all, I think too many parents today cater to – I wasn't allowed to do this when I was growing up, you know, cater to like, oh, everybody wants a different thing. No, family dinners should be a source of teaching kids social graces. This is what I'm making tonight. This is what everybody's eating. So first of all, parents have to be parents and not – you're not a restaurant. You're making a dinner, and it's for everybody. So that's one thing. But the thing is, go as close to nature as you can. That's the biggest key. Try not to buy things that are prepackaged.
look at the ingredient panels of what you're buying. There are some frozen foods out there that are made by companies that are not necessarily vegetarian or vegan. There are companies like Amy's does have some meat products. Go try to buy as many organic things as you can. Try to buy as many GMO things as you can. You can serve the same foods to your family that you're serving now, but just change the ingredients. Go to organic and non-GMO. Try to get, instead of getting prepackaged pasta, buy fresh pasta that's only got two ingredients in it and boil it. So it might take a few extra minutes to make your meal, but you're going to have something that's going to have more nutrition to it. So that would be my advice, is just to improve your ingredients, but you can stay with your basic diet, you know, making sure you have fruits, vegetables, proteins, things like that. If you are vegetarian, there's plenty of sources of protein that are non-meat. If you're not vegetarian, then really, really look to organic meats.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, it all starts with the diet. And stay away from processed foods, because all those are going to be a GMO ingredient in there somewhere. And GMOs are known to bring your system down. Your immunity goes down, your mind, everything. It all follows. Even they're showing a lot of things on Facebook lately. People are putting up how GMOs, by the third generation, their fertility, especially boys, men, they won't be able to reproduce. So all these kids that are eating all this GMO junk food and processed foods, their grandchildren are not going to be able to have children of their own, because
that's
their
right.
fertility is going to be a nil. So it's
something
that
people don't understand, is that the effects of poor diet, of eating toxic food, because that's actually what it is, toxic food, is generational.
Exactly.
That's why when people say, oh, well, I eat this and I eat that, it doesn't affect me. No, it's not going to affect you. But wait till you see your children and your grandchildren. That's how it's going to affect. How many children today of healthy parents, or you have two people that are healthy, eat whatever they want, but they have very, very sickly kids? It's generational. It doesn't necessarily affect the generation that eats poorly. It's going to affect the ongoing generation. That is a great point, Monica.
Thank you. But it's true, and people just don't realize what they're doing to their future offspring. So...
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Well, but let me say this, because I want to bring us back to the show at hand, although this is all this all goes together. But everything that the both of you just said about poor food choices coincide with all the information that we read about the drugs that are being used on kids with behavioral problems. The Adderall, the Ritalin, and like I said, there was a whole bunch of other names that I looked at that don't ring a bell, because they're probably the actual name of the substance instead of the pharmaceutical name. But the same thing is happening with those. Everything that you just said, the infertilization, the long-term effects, and none of what I read showed positive long-term effects, and I think that's one of the most important things.
Yeah, that's why I said everything. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. Finish your thought.
Well, that's why I said I didn't refer to any of these drugs, because I didn't research any of these drugs, because I know they're all bad. They all will create a toxic environment in your gut. So if there's any kids on these drugs, get them off and change their diet. You will see a difference. And why do you – I would never, ever put my kids on drugs like that, ever.
Well, I would like to say that probably a lot of parents would say that, but then they're faced with a trauma or something else is going on, and they do it because they feel like their hands are tied. So first of all, forgive yourself if you've done that. and move on and try to make better choices. But I do think you should be informed always, and I think that you should stay informed always with anything that you're giving to your children, whether it's food, a pill from the doctor, anything that you're doing for your kid. You need to research it before you let them put it down their throat. You're their caregiver. That's your responsibility. So I want to thank everybody. It was a very interesting show. This is something we could discuss again and again and again, I'm sure. Thanks, girls. Go out and have a great week. We will be back tomorrow. So see you then. Bye-bye, everybody. God bless. Thanks, girls.
Thanks, Rainey. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Monica.